At Mount Carmel, we care for every part of you, from simple checkups to complex surgeries and everything in between. With a team of primary and specialty care physicians, specialized nurses, and expert staff who not only help you get better, but help you stay well. Here, care is compassionate, personal, trusted. We provide care without limits so you can live that way too. Mount Carmel, more care for all of you.
Christian Muntean is an advisor for Rapid Growth. He is an advisor to organizations on scaling, on business succession and continuation planning. He is a speaker and executive coach, and he is the author of Train to Lead. Welcome to the show, Christian.
Yeah, thank you, George. It's good to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Yeah, well, I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. And personal life, I'm married. I have three young kids, ages 13 down to 8. And so we're, you know, up to our eyebrows in kids' activities and sports and so on. I enjoy sports as well. I've done a lot of different things over the years. Right now, I practice Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that's probably the main thing that I'm doing. The reason I do what I do is I've been in the consulting and coaching space now for just over 20 years. I got into it because I used to work in international disaster relief and community development work. And so I was working in a long story shorter. I was working in sometimes very safe areas that in very well-funded projects. And I saw that if our teams were not well-led, or if we didn't get along well as a team, it was very hard to have successful projects and it would really burn the team out. On the other hand, we could be in an active conflict zone in an underfunded project. And if we were well-led and the team got along well, it was amazing what we could accomplish and how high morale would be. And I thought our work is important enough that we should not be leaving these dynamics or variables of leadership and team to chance. And so that became a focus of interest of mine and a study of mine. I ended up doing graduate work in that space and started being invited into other people's conversations to help with this area and realized I could build a career out of it. And so that's what I did. But I believe that leadership matters a lot, and I just feel very passionate about supporting leaders to be effective and help them support their teams and the quality of life for the people that they work with.
Appreciate that. How did you get into disaster relief?
Well, prior to that, I was actually in ministry and in missions work, and so I was in the Middle East, and I just became attracted to opportunities to provide more tangible, practical support than what I was doing at that time. And so that led me to, and while I was there, I was introduced to people who were working in that space, and I was just fascinated by it and very interested in it. And so pursued that.
So bringing or doing really important work and then seeing that really important work needs to happen when bad things happen. That certainly makes sense as somebody who wants to help others.
Yeah. And I also saw that you can really want to do important work or think you're doing important work and actually just be doing garbage work and wasting a lot of time and money because you aren't doing it well. I mean, and being very frank about it. And I realized just because the work sounds important doesn't mean you're doing it. And if it actually is important, then you should learn how to do it. And in the disaster relief space, for example, it's full of, and it's the same thing here in our communities, but it's full of engineers and water and sanitation experts and nurses and logisticians who are very, very good at what they do, very, very committed. And we're usually never taught anything about leadership or team dynamics. And and then get put into those positions, very trial by fire. And so I wrote the book Train to Lead in part because I wanted to create essentially a very easy to follow manual for somebody who's being put into leadership to be able to be successful, because there's no shortage of leadership books out there. It's not as if I just invented, leadership topics. But what is lacking in the leadership space is how do you navigate all of the dozens or hundreds of topics that might be covered in leadership, talking about personality or emotional intelligence or ownership or accountability or structures or, all kinds of vision and all these different topics you can go into. It's overwhelming for people, and they tend to either just fixate on one or they just get overwhelmed and just try to survive. And I thought, because of my athletic background, I thought, part of my athletic background is I was a strength and conditioning instructor for about 12 years. And you could take an athlete and have them 100% prepared and ready to go to the day. So 3 months away, you know how to rate a training regimen, and they will peak right before their event. And we know how to do that. And I thought, why can't we do that with leaders? With leadership, it's always like, at most, here's some books, or we'll send you to a seminar. Now, don't screw up. I mean, that's the standard approach to leadership development, or this really heavy training, but you don't really know where should you start first, what kind of has to come first before you go into something else. How do you troubleshoot a problem, and just how do you approach ongoing growth? That attaining a position doesn't mean you now know how to lead. That often is just the start to your leadership. And so I wanted to make it practical and useful for people. So that was the long answer, but that's the concept behind the book and a lot of what I do.
I can certainly see where it'd be very, very easy to fall into overwhelm with this stuff, particularly because, I mean, especially from the perspective of you're managing a disaster, so you better be ready to go and handle all these different scenarios. But why would I know these things if I've never been taught them? So that's not obvious. And then maybe I get promoted into a leadership position. And again, here I am. I'm excited about doing the job, but I don't necessarily know how.
And that's not just in disasters. I mean, that's true for almost all companies. People are very, very good at whatever their technical background is. I mean, the most two most common paths to leadership is either you're very technically good. Let's say you're a great project manager for a construction company, so you keep getting promoted and eventually end up in senior leadership, or you're really good at sales or business development. So you're good at either doing the work or making money. And both of those have learning experiences that will be useful in leadership, but neither of them are exactly the same thing as learning how to manage well and lead people well. And so it's very, very common. You see anything from, doctors to people running early childhood centers. They're just realizing, wait a minute. I'm well trained. I understand what I'm doing. I'm good at what I do, but now I've been promoted to run this thing, and I don't know how to do that. And it's a different animal. And so I want people to succeed in that space.
Yeah, certainly being a top-tier individual contributor is maybe the opposite of understanding team dynamics.
Yeah, it is different. And it's different when it's no longer. Your primary job isn't you performing well. Your primary job is to help everyone else perform well. And even that orientation on a identity level and personal value level can be very, very difficult for a lot of people because they're used to needing to shine and really be the one who makes it happen or believing that. And to move to that place, you still need to do that, but it's different now because now my success is really demonstrated through everyone else's ability to perform. In the military, they call it being a force multiplier. Like, how do you add one ingredient, for example, and it increases everyone else's potential? And so that's really when leaders start to think through that lens of how do I grow everybody else's ability to perform as opposed to, just doing even more work now because I have this title. it's freeing for them. It can be freeing for them, but there's a often an identity hurdle that they have to be willing to shift or change. I think personally, to be successful.
Well, it makes all the sense in the world. And I guess it's sort of a throwaway question, but our is how much of it is DNA? But then, just based on what you just said, there has to be a strong, I want to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, 98% commitment to making it happen. It's a little bit like, what does it take to become a fit person or an athlete? It really just takes desire. Now, to become an Olympian, then you start getting into DNA and genetics. But even all the Olympians, I'm sure, anyone's that I've met, they're going to tell you, there's a lot of hard work and just showing up when no one else wanted to show up. And so I think that, yeah, there's going to be some people who just naturally have this trait or that trait, but mostly what I find, it's being willing to do the right things that help you grow and help you be effective. And my intent in the book was to try to lay those out in, I guess you could say, bite-sized pieces so that people could start working through it and predictably be in a more effective position as a leader within just a few months. It's not that you're going to now be the best leader in 90 days, but you'll have grown and you just keep that growth cycle. So I think it has mostly to do with, you gotta wanna.
It makes perfect sense, and I couldn't agree more. And it's a perfect analogy is if you want to get fit, it's 98% desire. If you
Yeah.
want to be a top tier Michael Phelps style Olympian, you probably need a little bit more, but even he's just doing the best he can and working hard. I think you answered my question. Your book is not 50,000 pages, as one might think, going soup to nuts on leadership. I was going to ask how long it takes to consume. You mentioned 90 days.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay. You didn't start a business to spend your Sundays chasing invoices and manual data entry. But as you grow, accounts payable starts to feel like a full-time job you never applied for. Bills pile up, approvals get lost in email, and your vendors are constantly asking, "Where's my check?" It's distracting, it's stressful, and it's keeping you from the work that actually moves the needle. Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay is the exit ramp. QuickBooks Bill Pay automates the busy work that eats your calendar by bringing every bill, every vendor, and every payment into one organized dashboard. Stop chasing details and start seeing the big picture. Know exactly what's due, who needs to sign off, and how it impacts your cash flow before the money leaves your bank. Vendors can even manage their own details so you stay in control of how and when you pay. Grow with confidence and put your AP on autopilot in QuickBooks. Learn more at quickbooks.com/billpay. Again, that's quickbooks.com/billpay. Terms apply. Money movement services are provided by Intuit Payments Inc., licensed as a money transmitter by the New York State Department of Financial Services.
Well, I mean, it's only about 200 pages. It's written to be, it's like a, it was written to be like an airplane read. The idea is that in what I modeled it off of was, is if I were to go out and buy a training regimen, let's say I wanted to run a marathon or I wanted to train for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or whatever, and I wanted to have a step-by-step training regimen that had some background. It gave me the understanding, not just like here's the exercises, but here's why those matter. So I built the book to be like that. So there's an assessment you can go through. It'll help you understand where to focus. Depending on your level of experience, I have three different training plans for beginner leaders, intermediate leaders, and experienced leaders for how they can apply the topics of the book. And then each chapter is just a few pages long with very practical exercises at the end. And the idea is you can read through it pretty quickly, and then you just walk through the exercises. And in my experience, it tends to produce growth, significant tangible growth pretty quickly, because it's just mostly ordering a lot of the known concepts around leadership, but just making them in a way in the maybe this has come up in your podcast elsewhere, but in the fitness world, you have this concept of bioavailability. Like you take certain nutritional supplements and some things get absorbed into your body and other things just pass straight through. I wanted to make these leadership concepts bioavailable, like very easy to digest, to absorb, and to immediately put to use and to produce, you know, greater health and efficacy in terms of your leadership, if that makes sense.
It does. I think that that's great. Is there a, just kind of sticking on that, is there a steroid in here? Say, you know, people could just start doing this one thing and it'll give you the biggest bang for your buck.
This is all natty. This is all natural. I mean, the biggest thing, it's just like fitness, like healthy fitness. It's really just showing up to the gym or taking your daily walk or, you know, have it's consistency and not try. Actually, it's the opposite of having the one big thing that makes the difference. It's having little things that you just keep doing, you know, even just focusing on this for a few minutes a day will make over time significantly greater results than trying to do one big thing and then hoping to sustain it. Because for fitness and for leadership, at the very, very core, at the bottom, it comes down to mindset and perception, how you see yourself, how you see others and see the world. And those things don't change immediately. And so that takes consistent, I mean, unless you have a really intense event of some kind, but typically it takes consistent repetition over time. And then you start noticing results and you start gaining results and they stick with you because you've now become this person in the fitness world. You would now become this person who is healthy and who does move their body and can now do certain things. In the leadership world, you have now become this person who can influence people and you are in control of your own priorities and your time and your energy. And you are able to order your life and other people's lives in a way to be effective.
I hear that, and I think it's good news because I might not be able to figure out super complicated problems or invent things, but I can be consistent and I can show up and I can learn and I can apply new knowledge. So for people who are aspiring leaders or they're in leadership positions and they want to get better, I think that that's good news.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the, I think, encouraging things about it is it allows a leader to really own their own growth and their own potential. Because there can be a tendency to say, well, if somebody else gave me this opportunity, or if this, if that, if these other things happen, then I can be the kind of leader that I want to be. Or if I didn't have this in my life or this background. And instead, I think the book walks you through, like, here's how you can actually find the handles on your own personal growth in a way that will translate into higher impact leadership.
Yeah. You got to be able to pick the thing up.
Yeah.
Where are the handles on this? So in terms of perception, or mindset and perception, are you saying you need to see yourself as a leader? I am a leader.
You need to see yourself as a person of influence and a person of impact. So I actually start out before I even teach any leadership concepts in the book. I teach about perspective and really evaluating my own identity and how I see myself, not just as a leader, but as a person who has influence, who has impact, who can act and make something happen. But then also I have to evaluate how I see other people. Do I tend to be more negative towards other people or cynical or critical, or am I more, or need to please, or do I tend to be positive and have good boundaries and so on? And then also, how do I see life? Do I see life as a place where there's opportunity, or do I see life as a place where I'm constantly needing to be on guard? And I go into broader interpretation of that, but I help people understand that I can only lead to what I see. I can't lead beyond or past what I see. And if what I see is a scary world where I have very little control, then my leadership will somehow be impacted by that. And it'll somehow be limited by that. On the other hand, if I see the world as a place where there's opportunity, I'm sure there's challenges out there, but there's opportunity. And I have the ability to act in a way that allow myself and my team to pursue that opportunity, then that begins to transform opportunity. I mean, it makes those opportunities available. And I don't think you can pursue those things unless you somehow see it. And so you have to begin. That's where you begin at that point.
I've heard the saying, you know, when you're inside the jar, you can't read the label. Do you encourage people to seek feedback from others?
I do. Actually, the method of coaching that I primarily use is very heavily dependent on, it's called stakeholder-centered coaching, and it's very heavily dependent on doing what's often called a 360-degree analysis, which is common. The difference in how I do it is I'll have people go back to their stakeholders, usually on a monthly basis, and say, as you know, I'm working on this goal. What are you seeing right now? And this is analogous in terms of the fitness context. It's analogous to having spotters around you or a coach that's filming you move or filming you play, and being able to get input. You know, as someone who's been an athlete my whole life, I'm actually currently in physical therapy right now because I had tore something in my shoulder. And I think it's fascinating to work with a professional, have somebody outside me giving me that input. Even though I know how to move my body and I know how to do these movements, they always have something to offer that I wouldn't notice. You know, the other day I was doing a very simple movement and she's like, oh, one of your scapula, your shoulder's not engaged on your left side as well as it is on your right side. I never would have noticed that. I can't see my back, couldn't feel it. Until she brought it to my attention, then I could begin to correct it. So I think having that outside influence on or outside perspective on our leadership is enormously valuable because you just can't see everything.
No, we all have blind spots, especially when something's behind us, like your scapula.
Yeah. Well, we have blind spots. And then I think most leaders also are very conscious of areas where they feel less able in or a mistake that they think they've made. And it can tend to be very, very big in their perspective. And a surprisingly high amount of time, that is not what everyone who surrounds them is really paying attention to. And so oftentimes they'll forgive a mistake and they're not really thinking about it anymore. They're actually more concerned about something else. And it's helpful to just get that realistic perspective of how do people experience my leadership. So yeah, that whole concept of gaining outside input, I think is both from stakeholders, from mentors, from coaches, from whoever, I think is critical.
How do people experience my leadership? Yeah. What a powerful question that is. And you have to have the courage to be able to ask too.
Yes. It is a terrifying question for most people. the interesting thing about that is people are already thinking of the answer. I think most leaders are afraid to ask, like they're going to create a monster if they ask somebody, like, how are you experiencing me right now? You already know how you're experiencing me right now. And so I'm not going to create anything by asking the question, but right. I am now allowing myself to engage with reality.
Huh. Yeah. Allow yourself to engage with reality, not just what you think is the reality.
Yeah.
I think that, man... That one question right there alone, having the courage, how are you experiencing this? Is that the language that you coach people on using?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. I think it's a useful language that usually generates some pretty good conversation.
For sure. Yeah. I see only positives that will come out of that. Sometimes some hurt feelings, but if you're able to move past that and correct, and maybe you weren't engaging your scapula or whatever it might be.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, at the core, all leadership takes place in the context of relationships. And so if you don't really have an accurate understanding of the relationships that you're in, you're not able to as effectively lead well in those. And so in any relationship, in any, you know, family relationship, friendship, you would hope that you can have a conversation. If there are hurt feelings or if there's something like that, you would hope you could talk about it, but you're not creating the hurt feelings by asking the question. You're just now finally, hopefully able to start doing something about it. And most of the time, if you ask, and people respond to you, which they usually do, it has the effect of actually raising a leader's perceived credibility in the person who asked the question. And then if you respond to it, like you act in a way that demonstrates you heard what was said and you did something to try to improve the situation, that again improves your credibility. And what people find is they go through these tough questions. It feels like tough questions, but at the end, they end up having more influence because people view them as someone who gets it, who had the humility to ask tough questions, to be open. What it doesn't do, and this is important probably because there's usually some listeners that feel like this is so vulnerable, it's so fluffy bunny-ish, it's so, you know, kind of out there. I will lose respect if I ask this, or I will become too vulnerable. And that really is really that, I mean, at the base, that's just ego that's in the way of growth. Feels very, very real. But I have never in all the years I've been doing this had a client where they asked a question like this and they became less effective as a leader as a result. Instead, people are like, you know, thank God, I thought you would never ask. Now we can finally talk about that thing. And when they're listened to and they're heard and the leader responds in some way, it just gets better.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Christian, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage? Where can they get their copy of Train to Lead?
Yeah, the best way to reach me or to get into my world would be at my website, www.christianmuntean.com. There's tons of free resources there. I put out a weekly article on leadership that you can sign up for there. Train to Lead is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and anywhere you would buy books.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Christian your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Pick up your copy of Train to Lead on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I'll link that in the notes of the show. And then learn more about Christian and everything he's up to at christianmuntean.com. It's CristianMuntean.com. Thanks again, Christian.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Finally, till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.